Hi everyone, today is Friday, November the 19th. It's been a week and a half or so, but you're back on with Listen to L Boogie. A lot has gone on in the last few weeks, and we're going to cover today some major events. We're going to cover those right after this short message. Peace. All right, everyone, you're back on with Listen to L Boogie, and we're going to cover some major events from the past few weeks. The first event we're going to cover is GOP appointed judges freeze Biden's vaccine requirement after federal lawsuit. A federal appeals court suspended the Biden administration's new vaccine requirement for private companies, delivering a major blow for one of the White House's signature attempts to increase number of vaccinations to corral the pandemic. The decision was issued by a panel of three judges appointed by Republican presidents in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. The judges wrote that there was cause to believe there are grave statutory and constitutional issues with the mandate, staying the order while the court assesses it in more depth. The ruling came in response to a lawsuit filed Friday by a court of plaintiffs, including Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry, Republican, part of a wave of lawsuits against the order from mostly Republican aligned groups and politicians. Landry on Saturday called it a major win for the liberty of job creators and their employees. The court's action not only halts Biden from moving forward, he said, calling the requirement unlawful, but also commands the judicious review we sought. The unsigned fourth paragraph order from the panel temporarily stops Biden's mandate, but is not a ruling on the merits of the policy. The courts gave the Justice Department until 5 p.m. Monday to respond to the challenger's request for a major permanent halt to the mandate. The Department of Labor instituted a ruling through the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. The U.S. Department of Labor is confident in its legal authority to issue the emergency temporary standard on vaccination and testing. The Occupational Safety and Health Act explicitly gives OSHA the authority to act quickly in an emergency where the agency finds that workers are subject to grave danger and a new standard is necessary to protect them, said Seema Nanda, the Solicitor of Labor. The vaccine requirement released by the Biden administration on Thursday, after weeks of anticipation, ordered companies of 100 or more employees to institute mandatory vaccinations for their staff or weekly testing, with a January 4 deadline. Federal officials spent weeks hammering out the policy, aware of the higher number of legal challenges it would face, but believing that the order was well within the Department of Labor's power to keep workplace free of grave dangers in times of emergency. The requirement is supported by a majority of the American public, according to public opinion surveys, and is a crucial step to increase vaccination rates and getting the pandemic under more firm control, according to the public health experts. But it has generated intense opposition from the small but vocal factions of the country that have organized against pandemic measures like masking, business restrictions, and mandatory vaccinations. Governors and attorneys generals in mostly Republican-controlled states have vowed to fight it vigorously in court. 11 joined a separate lawsuit filed against it on Friday in federal court in Missouri. Two companies in the Midwest represented by a conservative advocacy group have also filed suit against the rule. Many conservatives believe the requirement is a fundamental overstep of federal authority. Vaccination requirements from state and local governments and private companies have largely held up in court so far, but the Biden administration's federal mandate is more broad than these measures. Because of the testing option the order gives employers, it is not a true vaccine mandate and is softer than many of the requirements instituted by private companies. Workers who choose not to be vaccinated at companies that allow testing are required to wear a mask under the rule as well. Overall, it does not apply to employees who work remotely, outside, or otherwise don't report to workplaces where other people work or shop. Mandates appear to have helped drive an increase in vaccinations. United Airlines, which had one of the strictest mandates for a major air carrier, said its employee vaccination rates increased to more than 99%. Delta, which used financial penalties and testing requirements, saw the employee vaccination rate jump to 90% from 75%. Tyson Foods said recently at least 96% of its employees were vaccinated in advance of its November 1 deadline, up from under 50% before it announced the mandate in August. Many hospitals in New York saw vaccination rates increase to more than 95% by the deadline of the state's mandate for healthcare workers, up from 70% to 80% range before the rule was announced. In California, major hospitals saw vaccination rates increase to about 90% after similar, albeit slightly less stringent mandates. The ruling was signed by Judges Edith Jones, a Ronald Reagan appointee, and Kyle Duncan and Kurt Eckhart, both appointed by Donald Trump. The New Orleans-based Fifth Circuit is considered one of the country's most conservative appeal courts. Wow. Okay. Notice how they made sure that they mentioned that the judges were basically conservative, very conservative judges. And Republican, mostly Republican guys. For once, I agree that that they should have temporarily stopped the mandate. And they stated that vaccination rates at a lot of these companies, airlines and whatnot, have increased. Of course, if you're gonna threaten the people's jobs, people have to support their families. Now, you notice that when they weren't forcing employees to get the jab, that if vaccinations rates were low, 50%. But when they mandated and basically threatened people's jobs, of course people are gonna line up. Of course, if vaccination rates are gonna go up to like 90% or 95% or 99%, because people have to work to support their families. So the mandate, it gave employers basically the right to fire people that's not gonna go along with the jab. So when you threaten people's jobs, then people have to make a decision. You know, if they want to continue to work and feed their families, and or, you know, because the Biden's mandate stated that companies with 100 employees or more had to either fully vaccinate their employees or they had to test them. It's going to cost money for employers to test. It's a hassle to test and also costly. So quite naturally, they're going to say, okay, well, we're not going to pay for you guys to be tested. Either you take the vaccine or you lose your job. So what do you expect people to do? You know, people that can't afford to not work are going to take the vaccine, whether they feel they need to or not. And that's all I have to say about that. Once we return from the short break, we're going to go over another major event, and this one comes from the EPA. It's a surprise from the EPA. See you guys in a second. Peace. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're back on with Listen to L. Bookie. We're going to cover our next piece of news from November the 16th, a few days ago. OSHA suspends implementation of and enforcement of vaccine mandate pending litigation. On November 16th, 2021, the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, announced it is suspending all implementation and enforcement efforts related to the emergency temporary standard on mandatory COVID-19 vaccination and testing in the workplace. The announcement follows the November 12, 2021 order from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals staying enforcement of the ETS pending a final ruling on its legality. OSHA intends to resume implementation and enforcement of the ETS following litigations. If permitted, the newly stated position immediately impacts employers with 100 or more employees who are not federal contractors or otherwise subject to Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services guidance. Such employers can breathe easier as they are no longer faced with December 5th, 2021 and January 4th, 2022 compliance deadlines associated with implementing a vaccine mandate or weekly program testing. So there were so many lawsuits and the fact that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals stopped the mandate, so they're chilling with their enforcement of it because there's so many lawsuits. And that's another bit of news. We're going to take another short break, and once I return, we'll have some more news for you guys. 1 second. Peace. Hey again, everyone. You're back on with Listen to L. Boogie. Our next bit of news is concerning the president and vice president's approval ratings. Democrats in midterm as Biden approval rate drops to 38% in USA Today poll. This was from November the 8th. Maybe a week ago. Okay, a year before the 2022 midterm elections, Republicans hold a clear lead on the congressional ballot as President Joe Biden's approval rating sinks to a new low of 38%. The USA Today Suffolk University poll, taken Wednesday through Friday, found that Biden's support created among the independent voters who delivered his margin of victory over President Donald Trump 1 year ago. All right. Biden and his party are poised for a rebound, advocates argue, after the House passed a $1.2 trillion hard infrastructure bill late Friday, sending the signature measure to Biden's desk for his signature. Okay. That said, the survey illuminates the size of the hole Democrats need to dig out of as they look toward the elections in 1 year on November 8th, 2022, that will determine control of Congress and shape the second 2 years of President Biden. At the moment, views of the president have soured. Okay. Among the findings, nearly half of those surveyed, 46%, says Biden has done a worse job as president than they expected, including 16% of those who voted for him. Independents by 7-1, 44% to 6% say he's done worse, not better, than they expected. Nearly two-thirds of Americans, 64%, say they don't want Biden to run for a second term in 2024. That includes 28% of Democrats. Opposition to Trump's running for another term in 2024 stands at about 58%, including 24% of Republicans. Vice President Kamala Harris' approval rating is 28%, even worse than Biden's. The poll shows that 51% disapprove of the job she is doing. One in five, 21%, are undecided. Americans overwhelmingly support the infrastructure bill that's about to be signed, but they are split on the more extensive and further reaching Build Back Better Act being debated in Congress. Only one in four say the bill's provisions would help them and their families. If the elections were held today, those surveyed say they would vote for their Republican congressional candidate over the Democratic one by 46-38%, an advantage that would bode well for GOP hopes of gaining a majority in the House and in the Senate. In the president's first midterm election, his party usually loses ground, and this time the GOP needs to flip just five seats in the House and one in the Senate to claim control. The outcome would make it even harder for Biden to pass legislation, already a difficult task in the Democratic-controlled Congress, would open the door to aggressive Republican oversight of his administration. The poll of 1,000 registered voters taken by landline and cell phones has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.1%. Percentage points, as that is. Tony Emmy, 62, a retired healthcare worker from Washington, Delaware, who was among those surveyed, voted for Biden for president and decides Trump as he derides Trump as deceitful and malicious. But Democrats say Biden hasn't done enough to hold his party to account and get things done. This guy says, "I think the country is moving in the wrong direction. That is dangerous," Emmy says. Two-thirds of Americans, 66%, say the country has gotten on the wrong track. One in five, 20%, say it is headed in the right direction. That's no better than the public's uneasy view during the final week of Trump's administration. Americans are closely divided on the Build Back Better Act passed by congressional Democrats. In the poll, 47% supported the $1.85 trillion bill. 44% opposed it. The sweeping measure includes more than $500 billion in climate change and clean energy funding. It would establish pre-K for all 3- and 4-year-olds, extend the child tax credit for 1 year, expand Medicaid coverage in some states, and add hearing coverage to Medicare, and finance affordable housing programs. The White House and its allies haven't persuaded most Americans that the measure would benefit them, at least not yet. Those surveyed are a bit more likely to say his provisions would hurt their families rather than help them, 30% to 26%. 31% say it would not have an effect. Those findings reflect either a failure of communication by the bill's backers or a disconnect with what voters feel they most need. All right. Biden's approval rating is dismal to 38%, approval 59%. Biden's job approval rating is dismal to a 38% approval, 59% disapproval. He has the lowest rating of any modern president at the time in the term except Trump. Studies have concluded that a president's job approval rating is one of most powerful factors affecting midterm elections. The party of a president with an approval rating that has dipped below 50% often faces a blowout. In the 2017 midterms, when Trump's approval rating was 37%, Republicans lost 41 House seats. In 1994 midterms, when President Bill Clinton's approval rating was at 48%, Democrats lost 54 seats. Damn. Biden loses ground with voters who backed him in 2020. Biden has lost ground with voters since he won last year's election, but Trump hasn't gained it. Over the past two-thirds of those surveyed say their opinion of Trump hasn't changed. 14% say their view of him has gotten better. 19% say it has gotten worse. But Trump commands more loyalty among his core supporters than Biden does. Among those who voted for Biden last year, almost 4 in 10, 39%, say they hope he doesn't run for another term. 50% hope he will run. Among those who voted for Trump last year, 1 in 4, 26% hope he won't run again. 65% hopes he will run again. If the presidential election were today, Biden and Trump, 44% say they would vote for Trump, 40% for Biden, 11% for an unnamed third party candidate. In the elections last year, Biden beat Trump 54% to 47%. Lloyd, a retiree from Missouri, used to think of himself as a Democrat but voted for Trump in 2016, then left the presidential ballot blank in 2020. She's so disenchanted with politics that she stopped watching news coverage as closely as she once did. She worries that the president isn't competent, but says her Republican congressman panders to the right with a false claim that Biden didn't win the election, and she hates the name calling and is now commonplace. She hates the name calling that is now commonplace in politics. Wow, that's the end of that. African Americans turned out heavily, and I think about 83 to 85% for Biden this election, this past election in November. This article doesn't speak to it, but the black vote put him in office. And, you know, every news article, every news report, they don't mention that. They'll mention that he's support is waning among African-American voters, but they won't quote the numbers. The perfect The perfect example of this is the Virginia's governor's race. In the Virginia governor's race, both candidates, Republican and the Democrat candidate, lost ground. When you compare their both the guys' support, you know, I won't say those guys, but both the president and Trump's support. Okay. The Republicans in that race lost 300,000 votes. That means there were 300,000 voters that voted. Now, let me get this out first. Biden won Virginia by 10 percentage points. Let's get that out of the way. But then the Republican candidate that won the governor's race in Virginia received 300,000 less votes than Biden received when he ran for president this past November. Okay? The Democratic candidate that lost the Virginia governor's race lost 800,000 votes. He lost almost a million votes. So that means the Democratic candidate for governor in Virginia received 800,000 votes less than what Biden received when he ran for president and won that state. So, his behavior, he has totally ignored the party's base, which is the black vote. Now, I know I'm going to say this is going to sound like beating a dead horse, but black, when you look at who votes for who, the white vote is split always between three parties, three and maybe four. It's split between the Republicans, the Democrats, the Libertarian Party, and maybe the Green Party, if there's such a thing. Black people vote in a block. We have done it the last 50 years. Our vote is not normally split. You have some black people that vote Democratic, but it's a small number, maybe 6%. But the great majority of black people the last 50 years have voted Democrat. We elect presidents because we vote a down ballot Democrat straight across the board. We've done it for years. We supported this president. We put this president in office. He promised, you know, I feel like if we supported the Democratic Party for the last 50 years, we shouldn't have to promise them anything. But they've taken the black vote for granted. And now it's coming back to bite them in the ass. Because if he lost a million votes in Virginia, when during the midterm coming next year, if there's not a major development, he doesn't do anything major for his base, which he's not, because he's too arrogant and too, you know, he's just too arrogant too, you know, to do anything specific for his black voter base, which put him in office. So I think it would be a good idea for him to start doing hand exercises, because the Republicans are going to take the House and the Senate in November, and he's going to spend the next 2 years of his presidency, because he's going to be a lame duck president, because he's not, if he runs, he's not going to win. Or I don't think any Democratic candidate is going to win. Okay, he better do some hand exercises, because he's going to be using his pen quite a bit, because black people are pissed. And in my next story, once we return from the short break, I'm going to give a most recent development, a recent executive order that he signed that gives another group protections and billions of dollars, but not his black constituents, not his black voter base. We'll go over this and maybe one more story once we return from this short break. Peace. Hi, ladies and gentlemen, you're back on with Listen to L Boogie. Our next bit of news concerns is going to be directed towards an executive order the president just signed to protect another group. And ironically, this bit of news is coming from Black Enterprise magazine. President Joe Biden signs executive order to address crisis of violence against... Dun, 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 dun. Who do you think? Native Americans. Okay, President Joe Biden signed an executive order Monday directing federal agencies, including Homeland Security, to create a strategy to address a crisis of violence against Native Americans. The order tasks the Department of Justice, Interior, and Homeland Security to address and create a strategy in 240 days for specific law enforcement issues, and to provide tribal nations with support in implementing tribally centered responses as well to combat violence against Native communities. Additionally, the Department of Health and Human Services will be tasked with developing plans for violence prevention and victim support. Along with Biden doing the announcement with his wife Jill, Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Barrera, Interior Secretary Jeb Haaland, Attorney General Merrick Garland, and Department of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas. Today, I'm directing federal officials to work with tribal nations on a strategy to improve public safety and advance justice, Biden said at the White House's first ever tribal leaders summit, according to CNN. This builds on, the work we did together on reauthorizing the Violence Against Women Act in 2013, when we granted authority to tribes to exercise jurisdiction over non-Indian offenders who commit violence on tribal lands. The Biden administration has made other efforts to curb the number of missing and murdered Native Americans. Thousands of indigenous women and girls have been killed or vanished for years. Their families and activists say the cases are often discarded or ignored by federal law enforcement, which investigates crimes on tribal lands. In April, Haaland announced a new unit within the department's Bureau of Indian Affairs aimed at the crisis of missing and murdered Native Americans, calling it a crisis that has been unfunded for decades. The Justice Department states 46% of all Native American women have experienced rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner, and on some reservations, Native American women are murdered at a more than 10% times the national average. Biden announced his administration also directs more than 20 agencies to protect tribal treaty rights. Under the executive order, representatives from the Department of Agriculture, Defense, Commerce, Education, Energy, Homeland Security, Housing and Urban Development, Interior, Justice, Labor, Transportation, Veterans Affairs, State, and the Environmental Protection Agency, Office of Personnel Management, the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, and the Council Environmental Quality will be required to issue a report over the next 180 days on efforts to strengthen treaty protections. Well, look at what... Okay. This is him writing an executive order. This is the past Congress and Senate, or Senate now, because he knew it would probably be an issue, to do something specifically for another people. Okay, in order. First, the Asians got $50 million in protections from their issues with supposedly an uptick in violence. So their bill, the bill that was a bipartisan bill passed in the Congress Senate, and bipartisan meaning that the Democrats and Republicans supported the bill to protect Asians and Pacific Islanders and give them $50 million. Then white Afghans, they drew down the war in Afghanistan, which they spent billions of dollars and thousands of lives over there, and gave the effort to give the Afghans over there training on how to protect themselves against the Taliban. But I'm assuming they got comfortable. Excuse me. And once they got comfortable, they started drawing down the troops and sending everybody home, the Taliban ran roughshod over them and just took over. And they didn't even put up a fight to defend their own country. So at the same time, simultaneously, you had Haitians that were at the U.S.-Mexico border trying to enter the country to seek asylum for whatever they were going through. He put their asses on planes and sent a bunch of them back to Haiti. But at the same time, he had planes importing Afghans into the country. And get this, he wants the American people to pay $6.5 billion to resettle Afghans into America. Then there's talk of giving those that were at the border during the Trump administration that were separated from their children with the zero tolerance policy $450,000 apiece. $1 million per family. Now, after this was announced a few days before the governor's race in Virginia, and I think that outcome had an effect on that number being the number. So they are going to get something, but it's not going to be that number because it's unpopular. Now, the mainstream media they're not going to cover or talk about why it's unpopular. You know, so that's him doing things for Asians, Afghans, and migrants that attempted to enter the country illegally. So that's billions of dollars already to two groups. Well, let's say three. Asians, Afghans, and immigrants that at the U.S. They were at the U.S. Mexico border trying to enter the country, and just, their kids were separated from their families. So that's three groups. Now you have him sign an executive order for billions of dollars. Okay, I'm going to look real quick, if you bear with me, and I'm going to give you the numbers, because this particular order didn't cover exactly what they are going to get. So we're going to take a second and let me look up and find the numbers. Can I find these numbers? Okay, let me go back. And get this for you guys. Okay. Here it is right here. And okay, this is from, let me see if I can get a date on this. October 27th. It was updated. So evidently this has been going, so tribal community set to receive big new infusion of a big new infusion of aid. President Biden's $1.9 trillion relief package includes $31 billion for tribal nations and indigenous people to address long-standing problems like poor health care. After this, if black people stand in line for a Democrat, I don't care what Democrat, state, local, or federal, we have to abandon this party, period. Okay, after a year that provided stark new evidence of how racial inequities and a lack of federal funding had left tribal communities and indigenous people especially vulnerable to crises like pandemic, President Biden and Democrats in Congress are seeking to address those long-standing issues with a huge infusion of federal aid. The $1.9 trillion stimulus package signed into law last week by Mr. Biden contains more than $31 billion for tribal governments and other federal programs to help native populations. A record level of assistance intended to help bolster health care and a variety of other services in some of the nation's poorest communities. The money is a critical plank of Mr. Biden's vow to address racial and economic inequities and is a potentially transformative lifeline for tribes who were among the hardest hit by the spread of the coronavirus. It is also a high-profile step toward more equitable treatment after centuries of treaty violations and failures by the federal government to live up to its obligations. Mr. Biden signed the law last Thursday, and on Monday the Senate confirmed Deep Haaland, who has been representing New Mexico in the House as Interior Secretary, the first Native American woman to serve in the cabinet. The new legislation passed without a single Republican vote, allocates $20 billion to tribal governments. It also includes more than $6 billion for the Indian Health Services and other Native American health systems, including $20 million fund for Native Hawaiians, as well as $2.1 billion for housing and more than $1.1 billion for primary, secondary, and higher education programs. The new money comes on top of $8 billion allocated to tribal governments by Congress last March in the $2.2 trillion stimulus law. An additional funding for tribal health and education services in other relief legislation passed last year. Our promise to them has always been on any of these issues. They will have a seat at the table, Speaker Nancy Pelosi of California said in an interview. It's essential that we listen to these specific issues. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York and Democratic Majority Leader said during a floor speech that the legislation takes us a giant step closer to fulfilling our trust responsibilities to all Native Americans, Alaskan Natives, and Hawaiian Natives. The aid comes after a year that devastated Native people across the country as poverty, multi-generational housing, and underlying health conditions contributed to the deadly spread of the pandemic. The Centers of Disease Control and Prevention found in August that In nearly half the states, Native Americans were disproportionately affected by the virus compared with their white counterparts. There's nothing more unjust than the way we currently treat Native people in the United States with whom we have treaty interest. And this was an opportunity for us to put our money where our mouth is, said Senator Brian Schwartz of Hawaii, the chairman of the Indian Affairs Committee. This is quite literally the biggest down payment in American history in the right direction, in the direction of justice. Lynn Marlerba, the chief of the Mohegan tribe, said the pandemic highlighted the inequities and challenges in Native American communities. Mr. Biden and this Congress understand those challenges much better than the previous administration, she said. The funding, Ms. Marlerba said, is the federal government's recognizing for the first time that tribal nations participate in the national economy and have the same responsibilities to the health and well-being of their citizens as state and local governments. If you consider the Native population, depending on what estimates you are using, is 3-5% of the population, and we receive 1.5% of funding, that's significant, Ms. Marlerba said. It's a much greater number than the previous administration had provided to us. The funds will mean tribal governments will be able to partly, or in some cases completely, offset revenue losses suffered during the pandemic, address health care and shortcomings exposed by the virus, and expand broadband access. The legislation also includes two separate grant fundings for education programs for Alaska Natives and Native Hawaiians. In Washington State, Leonard Foreman, the chairman of the Suquamish tribe, said a portion of the allotment would be used to continue building the tribe's first health care clinic within the reservation. The tribal nation of about 1,200 enrolled numbers has used the services of doctors from nearby towns. Construction on the new building began after the tribe received its first batch of funding from the federal government last year and helped offset the tribe's losses in casino revenue. The recent funds will be used to help complete the project and further stabilize the tribe's economy. Included in the relief package is an injection of more than $6 billion to the Indian Health Service, which is part of the Department of Health and Human Services. The Indian Health Service was created to carry out the government's treaty obligation to provide health care and to American Indians and Alaskan Natives. The Health Service struggled to cope with the pandemic in some of the hardest hit areas of the country. The agency said the new money will help with coronavirus testing and vaccination programs, as well as with hiring more healthcare workers, expanding availability to mental health services, and providing better access to water, a major issue in many tribal communities. Beyond healthcare, the legislation addresses a range of other issues important to Native communities, including $20 million to establish an emergency Native language preservation and maintenance grant program, as tribes race to ensure that their languages are not lost with time and the death of older members during the pandemic. While the $2.2 trillion stimulus law approved nearly a year ago includes $8 billion for tribal governments, a portion of those funds remain frozen in a legal battle over who is eligible. Alaska Native Corporation, for-profit businesses that serve tribal villages in Alaska have sought to receive some of the money, prompting a months-long battle over the definition of a tribal government. More than 200 Alaska Native corporations, which were established in 1971 to manage almost 45 million acres as part of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, were the subject of lawsuits filed by dozens of tribal governments in the lower 48 states who challenged the Trump administration's decision to allow them to receive portions of the funding. They argued the corporation would not be eligible for coronavirus relief because they do not meet the definition of government. A federal district judge in the District of Columbia ruled in favor of the lower 48 tribes, deeming the Alaska Native Corporation ineligible for coronavirus relief funds. Because of the legal fight, only some subsidiaries of the Alaska Native Corporation have received paycheck protection program funds, though individual tribes in Alaska are set to receive some relief through the stimulus legislation. Representatives from the Alaska Native Corporation say that despite the success they have had getting vaccines into their communities, many villages have been stretched to the breaking point. In New Mexico, the Pueblo of Acoma continues its legal battle with the Indian Health Service over the reduction of services taking place in the community's only hospital. In late 2020, a coronavirus case rose in the state and hospital beds dwindled. Services at the Acoma Conocito Laguna Hospital were cut and was effectively reduced to a clinic. Okay. This is just the tip of the iceberg right here, y'all. This is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, they receive, you know, what they do is they use these big bills that's worth trillions of dollars as a Trojan horse. So they have, you know, they have some big titles in there, but you don't know the whole totality of the bill. So they kind of like snuck this in. They didn't really sneak it in. It was in the bill, but it wasn't publicized. It wasn't publicized until recent, as of October, that the Indians were getting so much money that was in the bill. You know, probably because maybe a lot of their, you know, so it's, man, I'm not saying it's good for the tribe, the Native Americans, but what about that the black people that built this country, our ancestors? You had the five civilized tribes that owned slaves. And after the Civil War, the government had to go to the five civilized tribes and make them set their slaves free. And then in the 1866 treaty, there's provisions for those blacks that are considered Indians because they were owned by Indians, and they have provisions in there for them to receive the same thing that Indians have received for decades, like casinos and stuff like that. But they were written or some provisions were made so that the descendants of slaves from those tribal communities haven't received nothing. So they treat us like a wet food stamp. So the more I read and the more, I mean, if this don't wake black people up, nothing will. It's like, it's not a slap in the face, it's a spit in the face. You elected this president and he's done everything for every other group but you. And he totally ignores you. So you can, and I'm keeping it 100. I'm keeping it a buck. You can lie, those of you that are black that still want to support the Democratic Party because you getting something, or because you Boule and you think you better than other black people at large. First of all, fuck y'all. Fuck the Boule. You know, but other black people that you don't see what they just spitting in your face. You support them and they do everything for every other group but you. Now go and line your asses up in 2022 and vote the Democratic Congress and the Democrats back to have control of the House and Senate. And see what you get. You're going to get more of the same, and that's zero. So line your asses up. And if you do line your asses up, you know, I don't give a damn who don't like what I say, but you're stupid. You line up for these fools again, and you ain't got nothing. Nothing for your people. If you ain't thinking about yourself, think about your damn grandkids and your great-grandkids. Since we have an issue with being a forward-thinking and unified people. If this don't wake your asses up, nothing will. For those of you that, well, I'm this and I'm that. No, it ain't about you. It's about us. And that's for you self-made Negroes. It ain't about you. It's about us as a people. Our ancestors built this country for free. Free labor in the South, cheap labor in the North. We supported the Democrat Party for 50 years. Y'all voted for this president and make no demands. And he's shelling out billions of dollars to everybody. And we don't get nothing but a damn holiday. Y'all some suckers. And if you line your asses back up in November and in November 22 and 22 and 24 for this fool again, for the Democrat, who I don't care if he don't run, whoever the Democratic Party put up, if you vote for him, you stupid. If you vote for him and they not talking about giving us our reparations for building this country, if they not talking about that, and the Indians been getting billions of dollars all these years for casinos and going to their communities, and he just giving them everything, $31 billion, and we can't even get, you know, our $17 trillion, then you stupid. That's all I have to say about that, man. I'm like, wow. So this is going to be the end of this episode of Listen to L Boogie, because I just don't have the strength to read the next story, because this is totally ludicrous. I can't, you know, it's reading it is like, what, they getting all this? And I'm talking about Indians, Hawaiians, and Alaskans. And black people ain't getting nothing. So line your dumb asses back up and vote for them again. I'm done. This is the end of this episode for November 19, 2021. This is L Boogie. Man, you don't know, now you know. Y'all, and again, like I always say, y'all be good to each other. We're going to have to learn to be better than good to each other. We're going to have to stick together. And there's no loyalty to any party. Not the Democrats, not the Republicans. It's loyalty to ourselves, to us. We have to be loyal to us. And it's about who's going to deliver what is due to us. Who's going to deliver what they owe us? America owe us. They owe us. You know what I'm saying? So y'all be cool. I'll holler at y'all again on the next episode of Listen to L Boogie. Peace.